Everybody, if we can find our seats, Rabbi Schechter and I have an ongoing agreement that we don't introduce each other, but just to say a quick hakaras hatov, you know, there are two types of summer jobs. There are some summer jobs that are cushy jobs and easy jobs, and some summer jobs that are extremely demanding. Rabbi Schechter has an extremely demanding summer job, so I just want to express our hakaras hatov, my hakaras hatov, and collectively our hakaras hatov to him for taking the time, the energy, and the effort to come share Torah with us this evening.
Sorry. Thank you. So good evening, everybody. It's really a joy to be here. I spend 2 weeks of my summer every year in Camp Simcha, so the atmosphere is very different than it is here, and it's nice to see what other camps look like. I don't often get the opportunity to do that, so thank you for having me. And Rabbi Leibowitz, it's always a joy to join your Talmidim together. So as we know, there are many, many different minhagim that we observe throughout the year that remind us of Churban Beis Elokeinu, of Churban Beis Hamikdash, and to mark and commemorate the ongoing destruction, the state of Churban that we're all living through. So now, all of us are fully aware that we are in the middle of the 3 weeks, and I thought it was an appropriate time for us to talk about a sugya that is very relevant to Churban Beis Hamikdash, and that is, we begin with the Gemara Maseches Moed Katan, Daf Chav Vav Amud Aleph, Haroe Ari Yehuda Bechurbanan. Somebody who sees Ari Yehuda. Now, what is Ari Yehuda? What are the Ari Yehuda? It's a good question. So I would say Hebron is certainly one of the Ari Yehuda. If you go to the city of Hebron and you see it in its state of destruction, of devastation, in a state of ruin, so the Gemara says you're supposed to say Ari Kadshecha Hayu Midbar Vikorea. Supposed to say a pasuk from Navi and then you tear Kriya. What if you see Yerushalayim Bechurbana? Now again, notice in this Gemara, it's broken down into three different categories. We have Ari Yehuda is number one, Yerushalayim Bechurbana is number two, and there it says, when you see Yerushalayim, you say a different pasuk, Tzion Midbar Haisa Yerushalayim Shamema, Vikoreya, and then you tear Kriya. Number three, the Gemara then introduces us to the idea of Beis HaMikdash Bechurbana. So this is considered in a category of its own. Not only if you see Yerushalayim in a state of destruction, but if you see the Makom HaMikdash in a state of Churban, then you also say, Beis Kadshenu V'Sifartenu, Asher Hilalucha Abaseinu Haya L'Sreifas Eish, V'Chol Machmadenu Haya L'Charava V'Koreya, and you rip Kriya. So this seems to be a very technical Gemara, very important Gemara, and it's what I want to talk about briefly this evening while we're all having the opportunity to learn Torah together. Now, Baruch Hashem, all of this has become a lot more complicated after Melchemet Sheshet Hayamim, after the Six-Day War in 1967, when we once again regained sovereignty over Yerushalayim, and we regained sovereignty over the Ari Yehuda as well, some of the Ari Yehuda. So then this became a much more complicated question. And it was really a consensus psak by many of the Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael and in America as well. Reb Shlomo Zalman has it in the Tshuvas Mincha Shlomo, Reb Moshe has it in the Igros Moshe, Rabbi Waldenberg has in the Tzitz Eliezer. Basically, all the major poskim of the last generation agreed that now that we have sovereignty over the Ari Yehuda, like Hebron and Beis Lechem, so those two cities, which were normally considered to be Ari Yehuda v'Churbanan, we no longer have to rip Kriya over those cities any longer. That is the general consensus halacha that we follow today. Now, there are those who argued that, yes, it's true, the Israeli army fought the war, and they won the war, and they now regain sovereignty over the Ari Yehuda. Again, some of the Ari Yehuda. However, there are those who said that you cannot call that under Jewish control. Why not? What do you mean? We have a Jewish army in there. We have a Jewish government. So there were those who said, no, maybe it's still classified. Maybe it's still categorized as Bechurbanan, because after all, we don't have a Malchus that runs based on Chukei HaTorah. So maybe the only time it's called not Bechurbanan is when you have not only a Jewish government, not only Jewish sovereignty, but you have Jews who are running the government based on Mishpatei HaTorah, based on the way the Torah wants them to run it. But in our generation, unfortunately, we don't yet have that. There are many halachas that are respected. There are many Jewish values that are kept. But in the whole, we don't assume that our government today runs by halachic criteria. And therefore, the question then became, should we assume that that is considered Ari Yehuda Bechurbanan? I once asked this to my father, and he said, you cannot say that, because after all, you look through Navi. The reason we don't know this is because probably most of us don't learn Navi. I heard you went through Rabbi Reisman yesterday. Did he give his Musa Shmuz about Navi? Okay, so you only got the toned-down version. A few weeks ago, we had the schus of getting the full version of Rabbi of Rabbi Reisman's Musar, and it's well taken. I'm in Camp Simcha now, so I decided, you know what, I'll take Rabbi Reisman's Musar to heart, and I found the Sefer on the shelf that I'd never seen before. It's a Sefer of Rav Schwab on Iov. So it happens to be I'm in a camp of people, 120 campers, who are all suffering and struggling and have terrible nisyonos in life. So I'm like, you know, Iov is stam not a bad thing to look at, but I don't know how to learn Iov, because what do I know about Iov? So I saw there's an English book called Rav Schwab on Iov. Anyone ever saw that? It's an amazing book. I'm like about 100 pages in since I got there last week, and I can't put it down. And how did I get there? Anyway, the Navi, we don't learn Navi enough. That was the point. But well taken. So next time you see Rabbi Reisman, tell him I took it to heart, and at least one person was listening when he spoke. So so my father pointed out that if you look through the Nevi'im Rishonim, they write that in the Zman Bayis Rishon, there were many Jewish kings who were of the Avodah Zarah. So you can't say that the government today is worse than it was then. The government today is maybe better, maybe the same, but it's not worse than it was then, and therefore we don't have a right to assume that this would be considered Ari Yehuda b'Churbanan. Back in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, it was not considered Ari Yehuda b'Churbanan, even though there were many malachim, many kings, who were not only not Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs, they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah as well. And therefore, my father argued that we should follow the consensus psak of today, and that is that we do not rip kriya on Ari Yehuda that are under Jewish sovereignty. However, there are some of the Ari Yehuda that are still under non-Jewish sovereignty, and that would be Eshayla. But those locations, generally, we don't visit, we don't frequent, because it would not be so safe for us. So we generally don't go there. I remember I went to Eretz Yisrael a few years ago, and I was taken to a community that was not just over the Green Line, it was like way, 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 way over the Green Line. I don't know what you call that. It's like the Red Line, I guess. And I remember I sent my wife texting me, you know, how are things going? I was a little nervous to let her know where I was. So I said, everything's fine. But I sent her a picture of the place where I was about to go into. And the picture basically was of a big street sign that said, if you go past this point, the Israeli government will not save you. You're going in at your own risk. I'm like, everything's fine. We're just like passing one of these. So, you know, don't worry. Take it easy. But generally, we don't go to such locations. If you end up in such a place, I would hope that the first thing that's on your mind is figuring out how to get out and not figuring out how to rip kriya. But anyway, that's the story with Ari Yehuda b'Churbanan. How does that translate into the second part of the Gemara? Again, as we said, the Gemara breaks it down into three different categories. Category number one is Ari Yehuda. Category number two is Yerushalayim b'Churbanan. What do we say today? So we look in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Tavkuf Samach Aleph, which is so relevant to now. That is the halachos in Shulchan Aruch all about Tisha B'Av and Bein HaMetzarim. And there the Shulchan Aruch writes, Haroa Yerushalayim b'Churbanan. Somebody who sees Yerushalayim in its state of destruction, Omer Tzion Midbar Haisei Yerushalayim Shamema V'Korea. Now, what's the Mechayiv of that Kriya? The Achronim have a major discussion. Why is it that I'm Chayiv to Rik Kriya when I see Yerushalayim? What's the destruction that I'm experiencing? What do I see that's not there that should be there? So that's an interesting question. Reb Moshe and many other Gedolim, Reb Zevin has it also in the Ma'adim Mahalacha. If you don't have a Ma'adim Mahalacha, I grew up, you know, some of us grew up on Goldilocks. I grew up actually on the Ma'adim Mahalacha. My father actually used to tell us as children a lot of the things from the Ma'adim Mahalacha. He loved Reb Zevin. Why did he tell us? Because he said when he was a kid, that's what he read. So he assumed that we probably are the same as him, which is a very unfair assumption, or unsafe assumption. But he used to tell us a lot of ma'amarim from the Ma'adim Mahalacha. If you don't have one, actually my father, I think, if I'm not mistaken, used to, at least, give those out to bar mitzvah boys. You still does? What?
Two of my sons.
Two of your sons, right? So that my father thinks that we have to be mechanech people to read beautiful svarim like the Ma'adim Mahalacha by Rav Zevin. Anyway, he has a discussion, Rav Shlomo Zalman has it also, and the question is, when do you say that Yerushalayim b'Churbanah? After all, you go to Yerushalayim today, it doesn't seem like it's in a state of destruction. Yerushalayim seems to be in a state of doing pretty well. It's in a positive place right now. So how do you deal with that second statement of the Gemara in the generation that we live today? And the consensus among most of the Gedolei Achronim of today is that we assume that Kol Zman there are still churches and there are mosques that are strewn about through the streets of Yerushalayim, that would still be considered a churban of Yerushalayim. If we were to have our own city where we have full and complete sovereignty, that would mean that we would be oker avodah zarah. Now, right now, unfortunately, we don't have the ability to do that. One of the psukim in Chumash is abei tabdunas kala makomas ha'edu, right? We have to get rid of all the makomas where they serve avodah zarah, she'abdu shama goyim. We haven't been able to do that yet. So how can you say Yerushalayim is bibinyana if right now Yerushalayim has Ovdei Avodah Zarah all over, and Beis Tiflusam shall Ovdei Avodah Zarah, not just that people are serving Avodah Zarah, but people are actually having houses of worship there as well. Yeah?
How does that come down in terms of mosques and churches in Yerushalayim? What we consider Avodah Zarah?
So that's a very good question. Meaning, you're asking, would we consider a mosque and a church to be a makom where they serve Avodah Zarah at all? My father likes to point out that that is a very big misnomer in general. When people talk about mosques and churches and they say, going to a church is not called Avodah Zarah, it's a famous discussion in the Achronim, Rabbi Akiva Eiger and others, should be considered. So that's all a discussion for a Nachri. Is a Nachri mitzvah in Shituf or not? When we say that one of the Sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach is that a Nachri has to keep a whole list of mitzvahs that are not really seven. When you count them up in higher mathematics, it's far more than seven and far more details than seven. But be it as it may, when we say that a Nachri is mitzvah in Avodah Zarah, so what does that mean? So does it mean, the question that the Aharon discusses, it's really in the Rishonim already, do we assume that them believing in partnership, them believing in Shituf, is considered to be Avodah Zarah? That's with regard to a Nachri. What about for Yisrael? My father always likes to point this out, that for a Jew to serve any religion that believes in Shituf is certainly considered Avodah Zarah. We don't have a heter to serve God in that way. So the whole discussion that the Achronim have, that people often mistake, I don't think this is your mistake, I think people often mistake it, that they think, yeah, Christianity is not Avodah Zarah, and Islam is not Avodah Zarah. It's not true. For us, it is Avodah Zarah, because it's believing in something other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore, that certainly, as far as we're concerned, would be considered Avodah Zarah, and that's why it's still considered to be Yerushalayim Mechorbana. There were other Achronim who weren't sure exactly what the Mechayev of Kriyan Yerushalayim is about. Is it because Yerushalayim houses the Beis HaMikdash, and right now we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so therefore Yerushalayim is Bechorbana? Or do you say no? Yerushalayim Bechorbana means that the city of Yerushalayim is not built up yet, and therefore since it's not built up, we should say that it's considered to be Bechorbana. So, I don't know, if you follow that logic, that since we have mosques and churches in Yerushalayim, then I don't understand why we don't rip Kriyan Hebron today. Meaning it's the consensus of Rav Moshe, the consensus of Rav Shlomo Zalman, and all the other Gedolim of the last generation was that since in 1967 we regained control over Hebron and other places, so therefore it's not considered a Korbana. So what does that mean? You go through the city of Hebron, you see mosques and churches all over the place, not only in the outskirts, but even in Maris HaMachpelah there's a mosque. So how can you say that that's not a Machayev of Kriya anymore? So that's just an interesting question to think about. What would potentially be the difference between Yerushalayim and some of the Ari Yehuda as well? Yeah?
So in the last we have to hear Kriya when we go into Yerushalayim?
So generally we assume that Yerushalayim is I don't know. Yerushalayim is an interesting question. I'll tell you, I've never seen anyone tear on Yerushalayim, but I think the reason why is because everybody who goes to Yerushalayim ends up going to the Makam HaMikdash anyway. So you're going to tear Kriya regardless. I remember I was once with the Rosh Hashiva of Ner Yisrael. It wasn't planned. I was coming down the steps of the Kotel. He was coming down the other way, and he was a little disoriented. I think he had just come off the plane. So I was coming down by Yeshiva HaKotel. He was coming in from up, you know, when the taxi drives around the back through the Muslim quarter, whatever, through over there. So I saw him. So I went up. I asked him, do you need anything? So he was like totally disoriented. He said, oh, can you walk me to the Kotel? I said, sure. Like, we're right here. So he said, I know exactly where I am. So I said, so why do you need someone to walk? He said, oh, I don't want to look because it's a chumrah. If you see Yerushalayim before you see the Makam of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, maybe you're mechuyev to rip kriya on Yerushalayim. So he said, I go in the taxi. I close my eyes once we get into the gates of Yerushalayim. And I don't like to look, because then I'm not sure whether it's a suffix when I'm mechuyev to the rip kriya. So he said, if you don't mind, you be the shegetz. If you don't mind, you maybe you can walk me to the makam of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and then I'll be there. Which, again, I'm not making fun of him at all. It's tremendous Yerushalayim for a person to even think about this before. Means a tremendous degree of Yerushalayim, and I was very taken by that. I think it was an interesting point. Yeah.
The guy who says it, but isn't Chumara meaning that there's a Yishmaeli government?
Where is there a Yishmaeli government? Yishmaela means Arabs.
Yeah.
Where is there an Arab government?
What Chumara means? I remember I spoke with this philosophy.
No, meaning do we have sovereignty? That's the question. So who has sovereignty over Yerushalayim? The Jewish government has. So you'll argue they're not Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs, all of them. The way that they govern everything that goes on in Eretz Yisrael is not always Al Pi Halacha, but maybe that shouldn't be such a factor, because like we said, back in the days of the Bais Rishon, it was the same way. There were many times when the Malchus was of the Avodah Zarah. Yeah.
Isn't the Makom HaMikdash ran by the Jordanian police?
It's officially under the sovereignty of the Makom HaMikdash, but again, that is Makom HaMikdash, which the Gemara here writes is a third category. So let's look at number three. Right, so the Gemara here writes about number three. And that is something that we find in Meseches Moed Katan Chavav, the same sugya, and it's quoted La'alach in Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch there, once again, in Hilchos Tisha B'Av writes that if you see the Makom HaMikdash, you're supposed to say, Beis Kodshenu B'Sifartenu Asher Hilalucha B'Seinu Hayel Esruf HaSeish. I will tell you, I visited the Makom HaMikdash, meaning the Kotel, I visited many, many times with my father, and I can't remember a time that we went that he wasn't crying hysterically when he actually ripped Kriya and when he said this pasuk. He really felt and continues to feel the sense of Churban Beis HaMikdash. I remember a few years ago I called my father during the 9 days. I had some kind of complicated 9 day shaila, and he said, I don't really know the answer. And I said, what do you mean you don't know the answer? Like, you seem to know the answer to many other things. And he said, well, I don't really know the halachas of the 9 days as well as other things, because I really believe that it's not going to be relevant anymore, so I really never sat down to think about it as much and as in depth as other things. And to me, I was so taken. Like, we say Ani Mamen, and we daven B'Yushalayim Mirchem, we say Asemach David, and we say it, but my father actually lives it. Like, because of that, he doesn't really I shouldn't say he doesn't know. He knows the halachas of the 9 days probably better than all of us, but he doesn't know it as in depth as many of the other sugyas, because he said he really doesn't believe that next year it's going to be relevant. So it's an interesting opportunity that we have when we actually go to Makom HaMikdash and we have the chance to put ourselves into that mindset and into the understanding of what Churban really means. So that's the question, whether or not we would say that today that's called Beis HaMikdash B'Churbana. So that really is very clear. My father always pointed out to us that if you see the Dome of the Rock there in the place of a Beis HaMikdash, there's no suffix that that's called Beis HaMikdash B'Churbana. Beis HaMikdash is not here, and not only is it not here, there's something else in its place that is antithetical to what we believe in. So these are some of the halachos that the Gemara mentions with regard to the three categories of Churban Eretz Yisrael, of Churban Yerushalayim, and third is Churban Beis HaMikdash that are relevant today. I do remember a few years ago when Rav Asher Weiss was in America for an extended period of time because his wife was having treatment here. So it was about 3 months that he was here for, which was the first time in many, many years that he was here for such a long period of time. And when I drove him to the airport on his way back, I said to him, oh, you know, this is the first time you're going to probably have to rip Kriya. I mean, when was the last time you went 30 days without being in Yerushalayim, without seeing Makom HaMikdash? And he said to me, no, I don't hold that we have to rip Kriya today on the Makom HaMikdash, because it's under Jewish control. So I was very taken aback by it. He was in a very uncomfortable mood because of what was going on with his wife, so I didn't want to push it too much. He said, yeah, we'll talk another time. I never got back to it, I never revisited it, but it was a very interesting idea to me. I've heard that there are those who say that on Makom HaMikdash you don't have to rip Kriya today, but I think the general consensus opinion in most communities is that we do have to rip Kriya when we see the Makom HaMikdash today. And it doesn't mean that you have to see the Ritzvah HaAzara, it doesn't mean you have to see the Shetach HaRabayis. It means as long as you see the Dome of the Rock, that means that this is Beis HaMikdash B'Churbana. So, when we talk about the laws of Kriya, I'm sure that many of you have probably never had the opportunity to learn these halachos in Shulchan Aruch, because it should never be relevant for any of you, Amir Tzah Hashem. But when we talk about Kriya, there are some halachos that we need to be aware of. And those halachos are patterned off of Kriya that we find, Rachmana Litzlan, when somebody loses a family relative, either a father, a mother, or a sibling, or a child, Rachmana Litzlan. So any of the above has a chiv of Kriya. And that's really where we take many of the halachos for Kriya on Makom HaMikdash, and we transfer them into this halacha as well. So, number one, the Gemara Moed Katan Daf Chaf Amud Beis tells a story about Amemar. Shchivle Barbarei. It says that Amemar lost a grandchild. Kara Ilave. And he was so pained by the fact that his grandchild had passed away that he decided he should rip Kriya. Asabarei. Then the son came into the house, means the father of the child, the father who just lost his own child. And Amemar basically had a whole new emotion of loss when his son came into the room, so he decided to rip Kriya again. Idgar, then he remembered the Miyushav Kara. He remembered that when he ripped Kriya, he was in a sitting position. And Kam Kara Mu'umad, he got up and he decided, you know, really I should rip Kriya again. So the Gemara here has the whole story. You can read it on your own. But basically what we learn, the bottom line of this Gemara is that when one, Rachmana Litzlan, has the obligation to rip Kriya for whatever reason, Kriya has to be done while standing. It cannot be done while one is sitting down. The Rishonim have a discussion. What happens if one was in a sitting position at the time of the Kriya? Now you'll say, when does this ever happen? When does it ever happen? You go to a Levaya, everybody's standing up. And you go to the Kotel, you're walking there. So you rip Kriya when you're standing there. There's no chairs when you're approaching the Kotel. So when is this ever relevant? Happens to be during COVID, it was relevant. Why? Because in the very beginning of COVID, I unfortunately had to do a Levaya. I had to do many, many, many Levayas in the beginning of the terrible Magefa. So at one of the Levayas that I was at, it was at the very beginning. People were really like not attending anything. There were maybe 15 people at the Levaya. And the grandmother, meaning this woman, had unfortunately lost her 40-year-old son. So she wasn't so old. She was 70, 80, something like that. And she was scared. So she refused to get out of her car. So she wanted to attend the Levaya, but she refused to get out of her car. So I said, okay, you know, whatever you choose to do is okay. Everybody was wearing masks. Everybody was careful to stay away from each other, but she didn't want to get out of the car. Then the Shaila came, what about Kriya? She has a chiyuv to tear Kriya. She did not want to get out of her car. But if you don't get out of the car, it means you can't stand up. So this is Nageya to this Machlokes HaRishonim. The Rishonim have a discussion about whether or not when the Gemara says you have to rip Kriya in a standing position, is that li'ikuva? Does that mean that if you didn't do it in a standing position, you have to actually go do it again? Or do we assume that this is only lichatchila? So this is a major machlokes. The Ramban, the Raivin, and other Rishonim discuss whether or not we would make somebody go back and rip Kriya again. And the Shulchan Aruch in Yeredeya Siman Shin Mem, which is where all the halachas of Kriya appear, the Shulchan Aruch writes, v'tzarech laks over the Kara, that we paskin like the Ramban, we're machmir, that not only is this a chumra lichatchila, this is something that even b'di'evit, if somebody went and rip Kriya in a sitting position, you have to go back and do it once again. There's another discussion in Shulchan Aruch about how one is supposed to rip Kriya. And the Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Shin Mem, Akol ha-meisim korea beger ha-elyon. When you have the Kriya that is done, that is performed for any of the other relatives, the halacha is it has to be done only on the beged elyon. However, when you have the Kriya that needs to be done on a parent, Rachman al-Itzlan, so then the Shulchan Aruch writes that you have to do it kol begadav. You have to rip all the begadim, not just the top beged, all the begadim, actually you got libo. So the question is, how does all of this translate into the Kriya on Makom HaMikdash? Would it be like Avi Be'imo? Would it be like Shaar Krovim? Right, there are different forms, different formulations of how we do Kriya. Depends who one lost. Now, why is it that when a parent passes away, they have to do Kol Begadav? What's the reason? Because we assume that the loss of a parent is so intense, it's so severe, you have to express it in that way. So the way to show that it's more severe to us than any other loss in our life is the fact that we're not just going to rip the top beged, we're going to rip all the begadim that we're wearing. Ad sheyigal es libo. Difference number two is, when losing a parent, the halacha is, one rips on the left side. Why? Because that is the side that has the heart. And therefore, because that's the side of the heart, ad sheyigal es libo, we show we're in such intense pain that we're going to uncover the heart. That's why we do it by the parents. It accentuates the pain more than the pain that we would feel for any other relative. We actually had an interesting shaila once in the shul. We were at a Levaya, somebody lost his father, and he came over to me and he said, which side do I rip Kriya on? And I said, well, the minute, you start second-guessing yourself. Or leave it. You ever at a wedding? We were at a wedding together, I think, where, it's actually an interesting ha'ara, nothing to do with the shir, but just interesting. Sometimes when somebody asks a question, you start second-guessing, like, how many weddings have we been to? I don't know why I'm questioning myself, but we were at a chasana. I'm not sure if you were there, I don't remember. And Rabbi Leibowitz was definitely not the Masada Kedushin. I will never forget who the Masada Kedushin was. It was like, there never could have been so many mistakes at a wedding if anyone would have dreamt it. So I was at this wedding, and the Masada Kedushin made a Baruch Pir Gafen, right? So that's what we do. Start off the wedding, on the Berachos Eirusin, you make a Baruch Pir Gafen. Okay, then they read the Ksuba. A bunch of things happened before then, which were problematic. Then we moved on to the Sheva Berachos. So here we are up to the Sheva Brachos, and they start with the first bracha of Shehakol Bar Lechvod, the skip Bar Piyagov. Okay, now why does that happen? It's not really his fault, because the way the Sheva Brachos cards are printed is very misleading. If you go into any store and you buy a packet of Sheva Brachos, they're going to give you the brachos in the wrong order, so it happens very often. I'm actually sitting next to Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky, and I said, one second, I think he just skipped Bar Piyagov. So he says, yeah, I think so too. So I said, you know, maybe someone should say something. So he said, yeah, Shai, you should say something. I said, maybe you should say something. He said, no, you know the Masada Kedushin, you should say something. Okay. So I go up to under the chuppah. I feel like such a fool. Like, you know, I'm standing in the middle of nowhere. Nobody knows why I'm there. And I try to, like, get the attention of the Masada Kedushin. I don't want to make a scene in front of everyone. So I, like, try to pull him on the side. The Baal Simcha is all upset at me. Like, what are you doing here? Making a scene, whatever. So I pull him aside. I said, you know, I think we skipped Baruch Pri HaGafen. He said, what are you talking about? We said it. So I said, no. We said it the first time around. We didn't say it the second time. He said, you don't make two Baruch Pri HaGafens. What do you mean? You make a Baruch Pri HaGafen. It's a Bracha Shein Etzricha. How can you do it again? And I start second guessing myself. 1 second. What do we do at my wedding? Start thinking, like, I've been to many weddings before. I've stood under many chuppahs before. I've been Masada Kedushin before. I can't remember. Do we actually make two Baruch Pri HaGafens or not? And I start going through, like, what happened at every other wedding I've ever been to in my life? And you start wondering whether this is really the case. So here I am, and this guy at the Levaya asked me, what side do I rip Kri on for my parents? I said, well, the minig is, Atchi Galas Libo, you do it in your heart. So he says, yeah, but look at all my relatives. I said, yeah, but your relatives are not children, so siblings of your parents are not going to rip on the same side as you. He said, no. Can I ask you something privately? I'm like, what's the privacy here? What's the issue? So he says, I have dextrocardia. What's dextrocardia? Never heard of it in my life. It's somebody who is totally healthy, but his heart is on the other side. So the guy comes over to me at the Levaya and, like, throws this on me. I'm like, never heard of dextrocardia. I have no idea what I'm supposed to say. So I'm like, are you healthy? Like, you know, I don't know. So he said, yeah, I'm totally, life expectancy is normal, everything's the same. Just happens to be that my internal organs were created the other way. So my heart is on the other side. So when the Shulchan Aruch says, Achi galas libo for a parent, what would you say for me? I'm like, look, I don't know. This was like one of my first shul levayas I ever did. I'm like, of course this has to happen to me. And I'm like, everyone's going to stand there and be like, oh, you see, he doesn't even know what he's doing. Like, you know, the first levaya that he goes to, he rips on the wrong side. I'm like, you know, do me a favor. Let's do it on the regular side. I don't know. I really don't know what to tell you, but, like, let's err on the side of caution. Let's do it on the same side as we would do for any other child. I came home that night. I asked him, I'm like, Daddy, did you ever hear this? Dextrocardia, you ever heard of that? He said, yeah, of course, the Achronim talk about it by tefillin. It says, Shalkan lo sayadecha, right? And it's supposed to be keneged alev. So the shaila that the Achronim raised, I think he said, Rav Shlomo Kluger, other Achronim discuss, what happens if you have somebody who has this condition, and he has to put on his tefillin, but his yad keha is one side, but his heart is on the other side, so what do you do? So he said, yeah, it's an old shaila. So he said that when it comes to kriya, he thought that it would make sense he should be like everybody else, because everyone's going to start asking questions, everyone's going to wonder why he's doing Kriya Shelo Kahalacha. So I was happy that that was the right answer, even though I had the wrong motivation for giving the answer, but he had agreed that that was the right thing to do. The Radvaz has a very interesting question. This is based on a Gemara. The Gemara says, you rip Kriya b'shas chimum. What does shas chimum mean? Shas chimum means when you feel the intensity of the pain. So, somebody has a chiyuv to rip Kriya, but he doesn't know about it. Right? There was no rabbi there. Nobody told him at the time of the Levaya, at the time of the Yitzias Neshama. Nobody said anything about the Chiyuv to Rip Kriya. A year later, he's starting to read an Avelis book. After the first yard sale, he's like, well, I'm supposed to Rip Kriya. So he's supposed to Rip Kriya a year later? Of course not. Why? Because although he still feels the pain and the loss of the individual who's no longer here, in the end of the day, it's not the moment of severe and intense pain. And the Gemara says that the Kriya is supposed to be B'shas Chimum. So it's a very fascinating Shaila in the Radvaz. The Radvaz wants to know what happens. There's a separate chiyuv of kriya b'shas yetzias haneshama. There's a separate chiyuv that one is supposed to rip kriya at the time when one loses a life. Now, this is a very interesting halacha because it's black and white in the Gemara that when there's loss of the life, gesundheit, that when there's loss of life, you're supposed to rip kriya. But imagine if a doctor in the hospital would rip kriya every time they were present at the time when somebody lost their life. No doctor or nurse would want to be around at the end of life. So we have a special halacha today that even though the Gemara says beferish that somebody is in the room b'shas yitzias neshama is supposed to rip kriya, if you have somebody who's a medical professional in the room b'shas yitzias neshama, we don't want to discourage them from being there the next time around when you have a patient who's holding at the end. We want the doctors and nurses to help give them whatever care they need. And if they're going to be afraid, oh, I don't want to be in the last minute because I don't want to have to rip my scrubs, then that's going to be detrimental the next time. So I asked my father once, Does that carry over to a rabbi? Meaning, sometimes, unfortunately, we're called to be there b'shas yitzias neshama. It's very uncomfortable, but it's sometimes very comforting to a family that a rabbi will be there at the end of life. So I asked my father, the same way we have a special dispensation for a doctor or a nurse, that they don't have to rip kriya b'zman hazeh, even though the Gemara says b'feirush they should, but we have a special dispensation because we don't want to discourage them next time around. So would the rabbi be the same thing? So my father said, you have to ask yourself a real question. Are you ever going to think twice about going when somebody from a family calls you to be present at the Shas Yetzias Neshama? Are you that kind of person that will ever think twice in your head, you know, I ruined my shirt last time, so I'm not going back this time again? He said, if you're in the Rabbanus, it means that you're musser to your community, and your responsibility is, if you have to rip a shirt once a week, Rahman al-Islam, then that's what you're going to do. Of course that's what you're going to do. So it's not going to deter you from going back again. So he thought there's room to be mechalik between a doctor and a nurse who literally every single day are going to different rooms. You know, it's just unbearable to do this every time. Or a Hatzalah member, every time they're going to do this, it's going to be a problem. But he thought that a Rav, he thought that if you're there, that that should be something that would be very different than a doctor or a nurse. Either way, the Radvaz says that we have a Gemara where we're told that ha'omed b'shas yitzias ha'neshama, somebody who's unfortunately there when a neshama is lost, is supposed to rip kriya at the time of Yetzias HaNesham. Writes the Radvaz, what happens, Rachmana Litzlan, that happens on a Shabbos or a Yom Tov? Now, you're not allowed to rip kriya on Shabbos or Yom Tov. So what happens if you're there on a Shabbos or Yom Tov? Do you go and do the kriya on Matzai Shabbos or not? So the Radvaz says no. Why? Because the Gemara also says that one of the critical components of ripping kriya is only when it's done, b'shas chimum, only when you feel the intense pain. By the time Shabbos is over, by the time Yom Tov is over, you don't feel the intensity of the pain anymore. You're not there at the time you'd see us in Shema anymore. That was this morning. Now it's already Matzah Shabbos. I don't feel the same intensity that I felt this morning. And therefore, the Radvaz writes, we would not rip Kriya then. The Lashon of the Radvaz is, Hol v'yidche yidche, since it was pushed off. So forget it. You know, you're not there to Shas Chimam any longer. You can't rip Kriya on Shabbos. So therefore, we move on with life and we don't do it. Based on that, the Pesachei Teshuva has a very interesting shaila, and that is, we have a halacha, which sometimes becomes very confusing. The halacha that the Shulchan Aruch describes, which is really taken from a Gemara Marikatan, says, if you have a Sefer Torah shenisra, if Rachmana Litzlan, you have a Sefer Torah that is burnt, and we as a community experience a Sefer Torah being burnt, we have to rip kriya. Now, we have a minhag today, if a Sefer Torah falls on the floor, Rachmana Litzlan, then we also maybe do something, and taniyos and different things, but the original halacha was that if you have a Sefer Torah, shenisrach, meaning a nachri comes, burns a Sefer Torah, so then we have to rip kriya. Now, ask the Pesachei Teshuva, what happens if you have a Sefer Torah, shenisrach on Shabbos? Rachmana Litzlan, there's a fire in the shul, or whatever, there are pogroms, whatever happens, on Shabbos is when the Sefer Torah was nisrach. So would you be mechuyev to rip kriya after Shabbos or not? The Pesachei Teshuva says no. Why? Because the Radvaz tells us it's only b'shas chimum, and the same way if you're there b'shas yitzias neshama on a Shabbos, you wouldn't rip kriya after Shabbos. So too, you wouldn't rip kriya for a Sefer Torah shenisraf after Shabbos either. So what is this relevant to our discussion here? Shlomo Zalman Auerbach takes all of this in the Mincha Shlomo and he says, what would be the halacha if I came to Eretz Yisrael and the first time I visit Makom HaMikdash is on Shabbos? So you can't rip kriya on Shabbos, but you have a chiyuv to rip kriya. Would I go on Matzai Shabbos and rip kriya then, or would you say not? So based on all this, the Pesachei Teshuva and the Radvaz, based on that, putting all the Gemaras together, Shlomo Zalman says no. My dahava habi. The time that I felt the intensity of the pain of Churban Beis Hamikdash was when I went there on Shabbos morning. Now again, you're supposed to feel the intensity of the pain on Shabbos morning. You're supposed to feel the intensity of the pain when you go the first time. So I was supposed to feel it this morning when I went. Now it's already Matzai Shabbos. I don't feel that sensational feeling anymore the way I felt this morning. I don't feel the intensity of the loss because I'm already used to it. So therefore, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, if you only go back on Matzai Shabbos, you would not be mechuyev to do it again. So we've been applying some of the rules of kriya that we find by a general loss of a relative to the laws of kriya by Makom HaMikdash as well. Yeah. That's a good question. How far do you take it? I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to classify that.
So someone gets angry every time they see a Churban Beis HaMikdash, and they have that feeling inside of them.
Yeah. I don't know. My father told me that he saw a tshuva in Reb Avadia Yosef. I've never been able to find it. I'm not sure exactly where it is. He said it's not in the tshuvas of Reb Avadia. He read it somewhere else. So I don't know. I assume it would have been reprinted somewhere. I didn't check. Maybe it's in the new Chelek Zion of Yichav Adas. I didn't have a chance to look. But my father told me that many years ago he saw when they started with the Kotel camps. So Rav Avadya Yosef apparently was asked, would you rip Kriya when you go to the Beis HaMikdash, when you go to Makom HaMikdash after you saw it yesterday on the Kotel camps? Right? It used to be, when I was growing up, people used to watch the Kotel camps all the time. It was really exciting. So I think now it's so slow motion that it's like it's not even a thing anymore. I don't know. Do you know anybody that watches the Kotel camps? No. I have a neighbor across the street from me, Rabbi Leibowitz knows him as well. For his 40th birthday, all he wanted was the Kotel cam in his living room, a huge screen TV. You saw this in his house? No. David Gallup. So his wife, for the 40th birthday, is like amazing. This is all he wanted. So his whole dining room has what? Oh, so ask him. He has a huge screen. He was so proud of it. That's, I'm not ashamed to say it. He was so proud that he has a huge screen for his 40th birthday. His wife bought him a big screen in his dining room, and he watches the Kotel on Shabbos afternoon. You just see everybody davening. You see everybody coming. It's like an amazing idea. So you're sitting at a Shabbos table. I guess you don't talk Lashon Hara because you're just looking in the right place all the time. Anyway, so so apparently my father said to Rav Avadya was asked, if it says that you only rip Kriya if you haven't seen it within 30 days, then what's the reason for that? Because we assume if you've been there within 30 days, then it's not a Shas Tivim either. You're used to it. You're used to visiting. I think they asked Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach once, what's the halach of somebody who lives in Yerushalayim but doesn't frequent the Makom HaMikdash every 30 days? Would he have to rip Kriya or not when he goes? I think it's in the Halicha Shlomo. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, somebody who lives in Yerushalayim and doesn't bother to go visit once every 30 days, lefachot, at least, he shouldn't be ripping Kriya, because he obviously doesn't care. He obviously doesn't understand what this is. If you understood what it was, then every 30 days he would make sure to be there. Anyway, that was Rav Shlomo Zalman's idea. But my father told me that Rav Avadya Yosef was talking about a situation where somebody saw it on the Kotel camps, and then later on, they see it in person. So what would he say? Am I mechuyev to rip Kriya when I see it on the Kotel cam? And am I mechuyev to rip Kriya when I go and I see it in person? So Rav Avadya felt there's room to be makel in both directions. You don't rip on the Kotel cam because it's not the real thing. And you don't rip when you go there in person either because you just saw it and it's not as exciting to go to the Makom HaMikdash when you just saw it on the Kotel cam. So that was the chiddush that he had from Rav Avadya. And I think he applied it recently when we were talking about Birchas HaRoeh on Hanukkah during COVID. There were some people who couldn't light their own menorahs, so I think he used Rav Avadya's tshuva to figure out about Birchas HaRoeh there. Anyways, fascinating how... What? He did? Oh. Oh, okay. So I had no doubt that it was somewhere. My father always told us as children, he said, I have such a good memory, I remember things that didn't even exist. it's not really true. He remembers things that just none of us know how to find. And then when we find it, we're like, wow, how did he ever see that in his life? And certainly, how does he remember it? But that's the siyata d'shamayah that he has. Anyway, we've been applying a lot of the rules of Kriya to the laws of Kriya when it comes to Makom HaMikdash. I see I'm almost out of time, but let me just point out something very important, and that is that there are many Gedolim who say that it's a total mistake that people think if you go to visit the Makom HaMikdash on Erev Shabbos that you do not have to rip Kriya. It's said in the name of the Chazon Ish, and Rabbi Yashiv, I once saw, writes the same thing, that there's absolutely no heter at all not to rip Kriya on Erev Shabbos. What is the significance of going on Erev Shabbos? Why would you say that Erev Shabbos is not a time when you have to rip Kriya? While it's true that you don't rip Kriya on Shabbos or Yom Tov because you're not allowed to, but what does that have to do with Erev Shabbos? That really should not be into the equation at all. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes in a tshuva, Le'inin imra makam amigdash be'erev Shabbos achar chatzos, ein ira tam shelo yikra. Rabbi Moshe says, I don't really understand where this came from. Why wouldn't a person rip Kriya? And he says, im lo shanema shehakriya yasa alav yoser tzar shetimshach b'shvil zeh gamachar knisa Shabbos, says Rabbi Moshe, if you're so in tune with your emotion, and if you're going to rip Kriya on Erev Shabbos, it's going to make your Shabbos miserable. So then Rav Moshe says, maybe I hear that you should. I don't know. I want to meet such people who really, if they're going to rip Kriya on Erev Shabbos, after the Chatzos, it's going to ruin their whole Shabbos. So that Rav Moshe says, unless you're that kind of person, so then we shouldn't. My father always told us that maybe this mistake came about because people are confusing it with Erev Pesach. Now, Erev Pesach after Chatzos, we assume, is already a Zman that's a little bit of a Yom Tov. It's a quasi Yom Tov after Chatzos, because that's when they used to offer the Karban Pesach. So my father said, if you go to Makom HaMikdash on Erev Pesach after Chatzos, you wouldn't rip Kriya. Because of that, maybe that's when people made the mistake, that if you go any Erev Shabbos after Chatzos, you don't have to rip Kriya either. But really, it's a mistake. And it's not at all comparable. Those two shilas are not the same at all. Yeah.
Well, how would that apply by Purim or Chanukah or Chol Hamoed Rosh Chodesh? Any of those
Purim, Chanukah, Chol Hamoed Rosh Chodesh, I think we assume are not considered Yom Tovim with regard to this. I think we would assume that you are Mechoyev too.
Okay.
Yes. I have to check again, but I'm almost sure that we paskin that you do have to, even on any of those days. My father is also Machmer like the Mishneh Berurah. And again, it's a Chumrah, but the Mishneh Berurah quotes a minhag from the Kafter Vaterach. That was one of the early Rishonim. And the Mishneh Berurah writes that on the day that you see Yerushalayim v'Churbana, on the day that you rip Kriya, you're Asr Lishtos Basar V'Yayin Kol Hayom. You're not allowed to eat Basar V'Yayin the whole day. So my father actually is Makbid on that. He's very Makbid on that, and he was always Makbid that we do it as well. He thought that symbolically it's just the right thing to do. It shows that you take it seriously. And he was always very careful to warn us not to do that. So he always said, if you want to schedule your dinner, then you should go out for dinner, even though it seems almost inappropriate. People say, right when I get to Yerushalayim, I want to go right away to visit the Kotel. So he said, it's not appropriate. You should first go to eat your dinner. And then the rest of your day should be serious. The rest of your day should be without Basar V'Yayin. So that's what he did. So I remember a few years ago, we were on a flight together. The minute I landed, I had a text message from the son of Rav Shlomo Amar. He said, oh, we forgot your parents. We invited them to a grandchild's chasana, and the wedding is tonight, and you know we know that your parents are landing tonight. Can everybody come to the chasana? So I asked him, where is it? So he said, it's somewhere in Harnof. So I said, sure, no problem. We're going to come. So we went to the wedding. So I was trying to schedule my father's day, what he wanted to do. So he said, okay, let's go to the wedding first, because we're probably going to have Basar V'Yayin at the wedding. And then we'll go to Yerushalayim later on. We'll go to the Old City later on. And that he scheduled it particularly that way, because he said, otherwise he's not going to be able to eat anything at the wedding, because of this chumrah of the Mishneh Berurah. So what is that chumrah based on? It's actually based on a Gemara Maseches Shavuos. It's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara there says, totally in passing, Ha'omer hare alai shelo ochel basar v'shalash deyayin. Somebody takes a neder that he's not going to eat meat and he's not going to drink wine. Ki yom shemes bo aviv. Like some people have the minhag that on the day of a yard site, they do not eat meat or drink wine. Or ki yom shemes bo ploni. There are other people who fast on the yard site of the Arachayim HaKadosh or the yard site of some great gedolim, so they fast. Or ki yom shenerag bo gedaya ben achikam. Or like some gedaya, we don't eat meat and drink wine. Or ki yom sherei Yerushalayim b'chorbanah. Somebody says, I don't want to eat meat or drink wine, the same way that on the day that I see Yerushalayim Rechabana, I don't eat meat and drink wine, so too I'm taking another upon myself. So what Tosis says, what does that mean? What are you referring to? Tosis writes, there was a minhag that people on the day that they saw Yerushalayim Rechabana, they used to abstain from eating meat and from drinking wine. And from there, the Rishonim write that this is really where the whole idea came from. Now, Shlomo Zalman writes that it's a midas chasidus. It's not me'ikar adin, it's a minhag that the Gemara quotes, it's a minhag that Tosis quotes over here, but still, it's something that that if you have the ability to be makbid on, again, I wouldn't say that you should cause a whole shalom bayis issue over it. I wouldn't say that if your whole family is not interested in being makbid on it, I don't think you should hold them back from eating dinner. But at the same time, if you have an option to do it one way or the other way, this is certainly something that the Mishneh Berurah brings to our attention, and it's something we should think about as well. Question?
You say that on Shabbos or Yom Tov, that you, or at least on Yom Tov, for sure you wouldn't have the Shas. Or shouldn't have Shas
right.
Skima, so therefore if you go back a second time after Shabbos, then
right.
you would be able to take Kriya instead of Yerushalayim.
So what's your question?
So that if you would go first on Shabbos, you can see it once.
So you don't do it again Matzah Shabbos, even if you go back.
Even if you go back, so we say you have the Shas Skima, even if it's Yom Tov or Shabbos.
So it's gone. Yeah.
Even that.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
When we say you can't drink wine or eat meat, is that the halachic day, or is that if you go in the afternoon, so that night maybe you'd be able to eat because it's like the next
correct.
Day?
Correct. That is correct. Yeah, my father always pointed that out to us as well. Yeah.
So in terms of the march, it says you should have Yerushalayim before, but not the Mikdash.
Right.
So according to the Machmir of that Ari Yehuda, is it even if you see Ari Yehuda or?
Could be. I'm not sure Tosis means dafka there. I'm not sure he means that it's dafka Yerushalayim b'Churbana. It's, whenever you rip Kriya on one of these... What?
Any of the things mentioned
in the Mishnah. I assume that's what he means, yeah. So let me just close with one final thought. I see it's time for Marv already. But, the Pasuk says, Hine zeh omed achar kasleinu mashgiach min achalonos meitzitz min acharakim. So the Medrash writes that that's a reference to the only remnant of Makam HaMikdash which is left today, and that is Hinei Zeh Omer Acher Kosleinu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands behind the wall, and we still have something that reminds us of the Beis HaMikdash, and that is the remnant of the wall that is there today. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter asks a very beautiful question, and that is, the pasuk here mentions two phrases that seem to be the same. Mashgiach min achalonos, metzitz min acharakim. It's the same. What's the difference between a chalon and charakim? Charakim means a crack in the wall. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says as follows. I have a wall here, but I have a window. What happens when I look through a window? I can see straight through. It's transparent. And whoever's outside can see straight at me. They can watch me, I can watch them. What happens when I have a crack in the door? Say, for example, you have a child who goes out to school, and the child wants to take the bus, and he wants to be independent, but he's only 5 years old. So a parent is not going to let the kid go out into the street by himself, but he insists, I'm independent. So what does the parent do? Let the kid go outside. You close the door, and you look through the peek hole to make sure the kid is okay. Every parent is going to do that. When the kid turns around, he doesn't see the parent looking, but the parent can see very clearly what's going on outside. Right, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that's what the pasuk means here. Hinei ze omer achar kosleinu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands behind that wall all the time. Sometimes he's mashgiach min achalonos, sometimes he looks at us through a window, and when we smile, he smiles, and when we see him, he sees us, and it's so clear, our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so clear, and it's so obvious, it's palpable. It's one that we feel so close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at times in our lives. There are other times, unfortunately, when it's only metzitz min acharakim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always standing behind the wall looking through the crack. He always looks at us. Sometimes he's looking through the window. Sometimes he's looking through the crack. When he looks through the crack, we turn around and we don't see him there. But don't ever make a mistake, says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Don't ever think that that means HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not watching over us. The Ribbono Shel Olam is always watching. There are times when he watches and we can see it. It's so transparent and clear and obvious to us. There are other times when he watches and we just don't see it. We're not able to appreciate it. We're not able to feel it. And that's really what Bein HaMetzarim is all about. That we feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu at a time now is not as obvious as he otherwise would be at other times in our lives. There are times in our lives when we feel his obvious presence, when we feel overwhelmed. My father writes in one of his svarim from Rav Soloveitchik, and then a number of years later I saw that Rav Asher Weiss writes the same thing on his own. And that is, the highlight of our davening every day is when we say Kedusha. And when we say Kedusha, there are two different psukim. Two different psukim that describe our relationship with our Kadosh Baruch Hu very differently. The first pasuk that we mention is Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzivakos, Maloch al Haaretz Kevodo. The second pasuk that we say is Baruch Kibar Hashem Mimikomo. Now think about those two psukim. They're very different. The first one we describe our Kadosh Baruch Hu as Maloch al Haaretz Kevodo. He fills up the entirety of my world. My whole experience is overwhelmed by our Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence. The second pasuk is Baruch Kibar Hashem Mimikomo. It almost sounds as if our Kadosh Baruch Hu is constrained. He's confined to his one little space. He's not filling the whole entirety of my world. So which one is it? What is my experience of seeing and feeling HaKadosh Baruch Hu in my life? And the answer is, that is the consummate Jewish experience, when we feel both of those throughout different periods and different experiences of our lives. There are times when we feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Maloch al Haaretz Kevodo. There are other times, unfortunately, when we feel Baruch Kibar Hashem Mimkomo. We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here. We understand that he's watching over us. We understand and we know that he's metzitz min acharakim even at those moments of our lives when we don't see from the chalon, but we understand that he's still there. But we feel almost as if he's confined to his makom, and he's not filling the space of our lives, and we don't understand that, and it's hard for us to accept it. But that's part of the experience of being a God-fearing Jew. That's what it means to have the constant experience that there are times when we're going to feel conflicted about these emotions. The first pasuk was stated by the Navi Yeshaya, and the second was by the Navi Yechezkel. They lived very different experiences. One of them lived in the time of Beis HaMikdash. He said, Maloch al Haaretz Kevodo, I look outside the window, I see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I feel him everywhere in my life. The Navi Yechezkel says, I of course believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but to me, I'm living through a state of Churban. We were thrown out of Yerushalayim. We were kicked out of the Beis HaMikdash. Everything was destroyed. And to me, the Navi Yechezkel says, we're all believers in HaKadosh Baruch Hu regardless, but we see, our perception of the Ribbono Shel Olam right now is that it's Baruch Kibar Hashem Mimikomo. Both of those are the experience that we all have throughout life of how we relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We shouldn't feel bad that at times we feel distant from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Unfortunately, that's sometimes the experience that we go through, but that's part of a Jew who believes, is that sometimes we struggle. Everybody here loves their parents, I assume, or their grandparents, or their siblings. Everybody has relationships that are very dear to them. But there are times that those relationships become very complicated. It doesn't mean that I hate that person. It just means that it's complicated. And sometimes I feel a little bit of a distance, and I need to work hard to figure out how to bring their presence back into my life the way it once was. And it's no different with the way that we relate on a very personal level to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. We hope that the Ribbono Shel Olam will give us that opportunity. Ki ayin ba'ayin yiru b'shuv Hashem Tzion, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will come back, and when you will grant us that opportunity to come back to Yerushalayim. Ki ayin ba'ayin yiru, when we're going to look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly in the eye. It's not going to be meitzitz min acharakim. It's going to be looking out the window and seeing the Ribbono Shel Olam smile at us. He'll see us smiling at him, and we'll have that opportunity, lahafoch, like the Navi says, to switch and to convert all of the Yimei Evel into Yimei Sason v'Simcha, that should be our opportunity. B'mheira v'yameinu amen. I wish everyone a wonderful evening, a great Shabbos. It's nice to see everybody once again. Great.
My pleasure.